I was with you my last two seasons, and playing fucking 9 minutes a game wasn't going to work for me. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you're walking off the court and, you know, they telling you, you know, like you feel. You know, man, you still got so much left in the tank. You know what I'm saying?
We're here for another episode of From the Point, by your favorite point. I'm here with Winston again. And then I got my OG.
Underground GOAT.
Yep, that's what they call him. The legend. One of my favorite vets. Sixth man. Should name the sixth man after this man.
I agree.
Lou Will.
What's happening, my bro?
What's up, family?
What up, bro? Great to meet you, fam.
Much love.
Yes, sir.
So we got some questions. I'm going to go back to when you first moved to Atlanta. You moved here. What age? 10? 11 from Memphis?
Yeah, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee.
And what was that like? Like, what was the
transition?
Okay.
I was in trouble. But it was just, you know, just being a knucklehead, being a product of your environment, being around things. And you know, my mom just saw it fit for me to I needed a new start. Mm-hmm. I needed a fresh environment. She moved me to Atlanta when I was 9. She moved me here during the 1996 Olympics.
Oh, big time.
She moved me here when the Olympics was in Atlanta. And she asked me, did I want to go see the Olympic team play? And I was like, nah, I'm cool. Because I didn't really understand what it was. Two things in my childhood that I skipped out on that I missed. My brother asked me to go see a Chicago Bulls 1995 preseason game.
Versus like...
They was playing the Portland Trailblazers in Memphis for a preseason game. And I was such a Penny Hardaway fan that I didn't want to see Michael Jordan. So I told my brother, no, I didn't want to go to that. And I told my mom I didn't want to go to the Olympics. So I look back like, you stupid as hell.
Yeah, I ain't going to lie. That's a crazy one. You have any, like, role models? Who was your role models as, like, a kid, like, growing up? Or
man, my sister, my brother, my mom. You know, those were the only people in my vicinity that I saw that I looked up to, you know, from a sports aspect. It was Penny. Penny was a big deal in the city. You know, he was making noise in high school.
Somebody who can do it all, pass it, shoot it, rebound. That's him.
Stayed in Memphis at Memphis State. It was Memphis State at that time.
To see Hardaway get involved. Thank you. Right on cue.
He was one of the people that I seen like make it out of Memphis, Tennessee, and become, you know, like a star. So I always looked up to Penny. But other than that, it was just my family, mom, sister, brother.
And when you kind of start falling in love with hoop, you would say?
Probably around right before I moved to Atlanta, like 8 or 9 years old. I tried everything. I tried to play baseball. Wasn't for me. Football wasn't for me, but basketball stuck. It was one of those things that I was just naturally good at, you know, off the rip, and I just stuck with it.
And anything about that move in particular that like jump-started that? Like, you know, you enjoyed it. You enjoyed being around it in Memphis. But when you moved to Atlanta, you were like, okay. Like,
yeah, for me, it slowed it down because, you know, I found my basketball community in Memphis. You know, mm-hmm. I started playing with my first AAU team.
I feel like that's a big basketball community.
Yeah, yeah. Huge basketball community, man. Shit, me, Thad Young. I don't know if y'all might be too young to know who Sean Williams is. Sean Williams played in the league a while. We all were AAU teammates as kids, as babies. That's dope. Know what I'm saying? And so it kind of started me over because I got to a new environment and it took me a little while to find my footing again in basketball, but it ended up working out.
Okay, so for me, we're going to jump different from your hooping career. But we're going to talk about retirement. Like, what made now better than earlier? Why not later? What made now?
I didn't want to be one of those guys that limped out.
Fair.
Overstay your welcome. You know what I'm saying? You know, I've been a hot player on the team before, and I look at the OGs, I'm like, man, take your old ass home. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I never wanted to be that type of vet. I wanted my presence to mean something. I wanted my words to mean something.
I think you still had it.
Yeah, I think it was just mentality, bro. You know, I just ain't built to watch basketball like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was with you my last two seasons and playing fucking 9 minutes a game wasn't going to work for me. You know what I'm saying? Especially when you're walking off the court and, you know, they telling you, you know, like you feel. You know, man, you still got so much left in the tank. You know what I'm saying? And so that was bothering me. And then also my kids, man, you know, congratulations on you, new father. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Back again doing your thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But my daughter started getting older. She started getting into athletics. She started hooping, started playing some volleyball. And my second to last year, I saw her play one AAU game, and it was the very last game of the season. And it ate me up. It ate me apart, bro. Mm. Just I couldn't deal with missing so many moments that were special to them no more. And especially when I felt like I wasn't producing anything for teams, you know. So I figured out my exit plan. Got out of it.
Yeah. How you feel like, you know, your transition to whenever you did decide that you were going to retire and all that? How do you feel like that has improved your, obviously the time and all that, but how you feel like that's improved your relationship with your kids, get to watch their sporting events or just being more active in what they got going on?
It's helped a lot because I now have the opportunity to really understand and know my kids and build that relationship with them. You know, when you working and you on 3-4 planes a week, it's just hard to build relationships like that, especially when you know, you're trying to raise somebody. And it was just, it was difficult, but now we're in a space, man. I see my kids every day. One of my daughters is in cheerleading. My other daughter plays volleyball/basketball. My son running around, you know, it's a good vibe. It's a good feeling, man. But that time is precious, bro. And you don't realize how much you miss when you're so busy on the grind, worried about, you know, your own career.
Mm-hmm. Nah, people don't understand how long them road trips be, how much that time, like, you really sacrificing, like, away from your family. So.
No, it's the ultimate sacrifice, man. And especially if you're a Trae Young and guys that's perennial all-stars and expected to lead whole organizations, man, I can't imagine the pressure that is, you know. And unfortunately, it put us in a position where our families, they get what's left of us, you know, at the end of a lot of those days. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that should leave a strain, bro.
Yeah, that's heavy. That's heavy. How do you think that Coach Lou, you know, now that you get into experiences with your daughter now, is different than Hooper Lou?
Yeah.
Player Lou?
I think I'm the same. I think I'm the same, man. I probably yelled at my team once.
But laid back.
I'm super laid back, but I'm still finding my voice and my footing in the coaching world. Mm-hmm. I'm learning ways to communicate, learning ways to teach. You know what I'm saying? It ain't as easy as we thought it was.
Yeah.
Like, especially when you're dealing with kids. Try to teach kids.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
You got to be so patient.
But it's so fun, though. Yeah. It's so rewarding when you see the things that you're putting in place for them that it starts to pick up on the court, man. It's so rewarding.
So that goes into my next question. Do you so is there a coach that you've had that you see yourself as, or that you've taken things of? And who is your favorite coach you
played? Yeah, I've taken pieces from a few coaches that I respect. I really respect Doc a lot. Doc Rivers was one of those coaches in my career. That I always give him credit for putting me back on my feet. When I got with Doc, I was at a place where I thought I was going to retire then. I think I was in my 12th or 13th season at that time, and I just felt like I was dwindling down. Couldn't really find my rhythm and stick on the team. I got traded 3 times in 3 months. I was on 3 different teams in 3 months. I got with Doc. And if you ever go back and look at the press conference when I got traded to the Clippers, I stood there with my jersey, took the picture, and walked off fast as I could. And he called me right after that, and he was like, "Yo, come back to the office." And, you know, he was like, "What's the problem?" Like, it looked like you don't want to be here. I said, "I don't." I said, "I'm getting bounced around. Like, I think I'm done." He's like, "Well, I don't know what they thinking, but I need you. You know, I need the best version of Lou Williams I can get." He was like, "You know, I'm the 6-man whisperer. I make guys 6-man around here. Mm-hmm. So I need you to clean your attitude up, get your mind right, and come back ready to work." And I won 2 more 6-man of the years after that, you know, with Doc. So I take a lot from him. I take a lot from T. Lou. I thought T. Lou was a dope coach.
Love,
I think, you know, as a coach, my temperament is more T. Lou than anybody's, because he was just like, "I'm going to give you all the instruments, and I'm going to let y'all go make the music. Mm-hmm. If y'all mess up the music, I'm going to step in and tell y'all, yo, mm-hmm. y'all messing up my music." You know, and that's who I take a lot of temperament from. But those two coaches, and I had Quinn as well. Quinn was one of my guys. He was I had Quinn twice, I want to say. I think I had Quinn in Philly and my first stop in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. But I had Q. Mm-hmm. He taught me a lot. I really rock with Q, and I had Kenny Atkinson at, that was coached for,
people say he's cool.
for Brooklyn for a while. But his style was more like, you know, skill and development. I think that's who he naturally is, you know, opposed to being a head coach. But those are all guys that I take pieces from. Like, when we get down to skill work, I'm in my Kenny bag.
Yeah.
And when I'm trying to teach, I'm more of a Doc, and I'm more of a T. Lou.
Yeah. What do you think, you know, speaking for him a little bit, but what do you think Quinn brings to their group now?
Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he gonna hold everybody accountable, and he know his shit. You know, he's an accomplished coach. You've been able to see that, but he's gonna hold everybody accountable. And you know, when he starts slicking his hair back, watch out. I'll give you the heads up. When he start playing in his hair, watch out. He about to start tripping.
So for me, I've only been in year six, so and there's already seasons that I want to go back and like redo. Like, not necessarily redo the whole season, but just redo some moments that I feel like could change the season. Like, out of your long career, is there any time or any team, any moment that you feel like if things would have been different, y'all could have went further that season?
Or? Absolutely. My seventh season. So about where you are in your career, I was at a turning point. I was at a place where, you know, it was kind of like make or break. You know, I was one of the young guys on a team that they were investing a lot in. You know, I was on the Sixers. It was me, Thad Young, Spencer Halls, Evan Turner, Andre Iguodala, Drew Holiday, Mo Spates.
Y'all had a squad.
No, you know what's crazy? I'm sorry to cut you off. They really traded all of them.
Yeah.
And if they would have kept them just for a couple more years, you don't know
what
exactly.
What could
that was like prime for all those dudes.
We had that group, and as an 8 seed, we beat Chicago in the first round, Derrick Rose tore his knee up, unfortunately. But we went on to win that series 4-2, and we took Boston to 7. And they beat us because Paul Pierce fouled out and Rajon Rondo hit 2 threes. To beat us at the end of the game. So if you tell me Rondo is going to make 2 threes at the end of a game, we'll take our chances, you know, because he wasn't known to be a shooter, and he knocked them down. But, you know, that's how thin of a line it was from us getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And that summer they told me I can go. Ended up trading Iguodala, broke that whole team down. And, you know, and we never had an opportunity to kind of see what would have been with that group.
Well, did you leave that year?
I left that summer. I left that summer.
That was a squad.
I signed with the Hawks. They told me I can go, and they replaced me with Nick Young.
Man. Yeah.
That's a squad.
They say what could have been.
And we all were young.
Yeah.
We all were young. I think Iggy was in his eighth year, and I was in my seventh. And we were the oldest.
We the older
guys that were playing. We had vets on that team. You know, Tony Batty was on that team. I think Elton Brand was on that team with us. You know, but our core, we were young. We broke that team up.
Any other group that you feel like that you've been a part of that maybe not to that extent, but kind of had a similar kind of aura around it where like, you miss one?
The bubble group, the Clippers bubble group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just, the personality of that group, we just weren't built for the bubble.
So what you mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. There's some good teams. Or there are some teams that just, like Denver, they stood out, but then, like, there wasn't, like, the Lakers, I didn't think they was going to – a lot of people didn't think they would win if the regular season was in the NBA.
I agree. I think we win a championship if
– I thought y'all were. Y'all were my pick.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? What was the difference in there?
It was a struggle to get us to the bubble to begin with. We didn't even want to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think just mentally we came into it without just the right mindset to finish the job. We didn't even want to be there. And I think once we got there and we was in it, you know, I think I was in the bubble 97 days was how long I was there. And I think about day 67, I was like, let's get the fuck out of here. Like,
yeah.
You know, so I think mentally we wasn't in it for the long game. We didn't really see, you know, the pot of gold at the end of it. We were starting to hear the rumblings like, oh, nobody's going to respect this chip and all of that. And so I think we kind of just took our foot off the gas.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people talked about you leaving the bubble too. And I tell people all the time, like, you're the person that put me on the Magic City wing. So
Yeah, a lot of people just don't get it.
Can you explain that? Like, what the that whole situation is? Because I know you have before, but, like, people said you left, and they see a picture with you and Jack and Magic, and if it's you ain't had Magic City wings, you wouldn't understand.
It's a lot of it was a lot of nothing. I think everybody heard Magic City, and everybody's imaginations ran wild, and the stories went wherever they wanted to go. However, but I left the bubble to go to a funeral. I got cleared to go to a funeral. Had a doctor travel with me that was COVID testing me. They leave that part out the story, like I was just out tripping. They leave that out. Went to we had to wait the day before the funeral. Mind you, I've been in a bubble. I've been eating hotel food, and this is my first time getting fresh air, getting out of Orlando. I'm home. I'm like, yeah, I want some food. I want something that I really like and enjoy. I want some wings. I want what I want. You know what I'm saying? And so we leave the wake. It's like 5 p.m. So we're going to stop by Magic, grab some food right quick, and then go to the crib and get back to Orlando. So get the Magic. Mind you, it's 8 people there. All of this is public record at this point now because they did like a whole investigation. It was 8 people in there. 4 of them were with me. You know what I'm saying? And had my mask on doing the whole thing. I thought I was doing something responsible. So I'll give you some backstory on Jack Harlow. I met Jack in 2017. My business partner is part of Jack's team. And so Jack would come around us, and I got familiar with him. We were cool. Spent some time with him. So fast forward to 2020, 2021. What's Popping blows up. Jack is one of the biggest stars in the world. He walks in Magic City with my business partner. So I'm like, oh shit, Jack, congrats on everything. Much love, my brother. Like, man, we got to take a shot, bro. He like, cool, we take a shot. So Jack asked me, yo, is it cool we take a picture? I'm like, yeah, I don't see why not. We both got our mask on. So take the picture with the shots. Man, that's the picture that circulated.
It got out, yeah.
We take the picture. That's it. My food comes out. I leave, he leave. Next morning,
you all over.
My GM called me. First question, he says, hey man, who the fuck is Jack Harlow? I said, he's a rapper. Like, what's up? Nothing, I'll call you back. Hangs up on me. My agent calls me. He said, hey, stay by your phone. We might have a problem. So I'm like, what's going on? He says, go to Twitter. Check my Twitter. Jack has went viral because he posted the picture. The problem was, he said, y'all chill. This was an old picture, but I had the mask on from the bubble. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And so
it kind of just made it a little worse. And
because he tried to cover for me once he realized what was going on, he tried to cover for me. And it took a life of his own, bro. And it became... Well, to this day, I'm lemon pepper Luke.
But people don't understand. He got his own logo. Like, you go in there, I go in there at the games now. It's like, I let him know, like, I need the wings. As soon as I pull up, he put me on. You pull up, I don't even go in no more. They just bring out the wings.
First time I met Lou, I've already had Lou wings in there. I've only been once and got them. They're fire.
If you live in Atlanta, you understand, like, Magic City is literally somewhere we eat.
Yeah,
as a culture, this is where we it's one of our restaurants. It ain't about strippers, it ain't about dancers, it ain't about none of that. Like, to a lot of people it is, don't get me wrong, but
nah.
Wide View, Magic City, and wings are synonymous with each other at this point. You know what I'm saying? And so that whole scenario took a life of its own. People said I was in there partying. There even was a stripper that came out and said that I was tipping her, throwing money. And get this, she did an interview for the New York Post about this.
Oh,
like, not just any newspaper.
Like a major outlet.
She did an interview and lied her ass off. It made it worse. So it just, I dealt with it for months. Even people, they blame me for us not winning the championship in the bubble. And I was like, the reality is, I missed 2 games before the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I was back for the playoffs. I didn't miss 1 playoff game, but they said I.
Right.
But never got fined, never got suspended, never anything. But it blew up into this whole thing. So it is what it is.
Mm. That's That's still crazy to me. I still can't believe that happened.
It's a weird time. It feels like the pandemic was so long ago.
So long.
We were talking about it the other day. It's like people forgot about it. It's like people forgot about COVID.
So long ago, had all of us out of our minds.
What's up, everybody? It's Winston from The Point. Make sure you go check out Underdog Sports, the best place to play fantasy games. Our favorite game right now is Pick 'em. It's available in over 30 states, and it's so easy to play. All you have to do is choose from 2 to 5 individual player projections and pick whether they're going to go higher or lower. You can 20 times your money if you go 5 for 5. Sounds like fun? Download their app with the link below and make sure you use our code from The Point to get 100% deposit match and an instant pick 'em special. Then send us some of your entries for this week's NFL slate.
But you got to play with Bean. You got to play with Kobe. Like, I know y'all, you have so many stories that just being around him. What was the difference between him and like everybody else that you played with, or like all the other guys that you've been around? What was the difference?
The major thing that separated Bean from a lot of other superstars that I've played with is like he had unwavering confidence in himself, and not in like an arrogant way, but he really felt like, I'm the best basketball player on earth. I'm not adjusting to nobody. Everybody got to adjust to me. I think that was the big difference from him and everybody else. Like, he was just, he was clear on his goals. He was clear on his missions. He was clear on how he wanted to attack games. If he played y'all, if he played the Hawks, he was going, hey, this game, I'm in the post. You know, they got small guards. I'm in the post this game. Next game, hey, I'm in the pick and roll. This is what, like, he made his adjustments team by team and how he was going to go about games. But that was the one thing that separated him, dog. He was just like, y'all got to deal with me every night.
Yeah.
You know, and I was with him at the end of his career. So I can't imagine how he was in the thick of things when he was in championship runs. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That was one of my biggest hangups, man. I used to always look at him. I'd be like, damn, man, I wish I was with you when, like, you was in the hunt.
He was in the,
you know what I'm saying? Because he had the personality, like, either y'all coming or stay y'all ass at home, but we gonna do this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I wish that would have did so much for my career, man, if I was with him then.
Yeah. What even the opportunity that you did get to experience with him, what do you feel like he instilled in you most? Because like you said, like, that was kind of, you were starting to transition at that point into a different part of your career than what you started with. Like, what do you think kind of Kobe inspired you to?
Man, you just got to have blinders on.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get to a certain place, you just got to have blinders on and trying to get to your destination, man. I just used to look at him and I'm like, me and Nick Young, we never took nothing serious on that team. Like, Nick dragged me into a lot of bullshit with him on that team. And we used to look at each other like, man, you heard what he just said? And he'd be dead serious. And it'd be some off-the-wall shit. I'll be honest. It would be so off-the-wall because we couldn't understand it. We didn't understand the mentality. Mm-hmm. But he would be dead serious. And we were like, well, let's see it happen. Like, I've watched him. Will Barton had 25 at halftime. And he came in at half. He said, y'all ain't trying to guard him. I'm going to guard him. He's just not going to exist. And me and Nick looked at each other like, yeah, okay. His motherfucker's cooking. And Nick and Will Barton had 2 points second half. So it was just like that mentality. It was like,
and you saying you catching him later in his career.
This is like at the end, bro. But it was also wild just to see what he went through to prepare for games at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, dog had ice on his shoulders, ice on his knees, ice bath, ice on his legs. Like, he gave everything he had to finish the job, bro. He gave everything he had left. Man. Even his last game, a 60-point game. He told us he was going to take 60 shots.
I believe you.
He said it. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to shoot the ball 60 times. And then his next sentence was, come on, man, y'all play. We're like, hell no. Because at that point, they had shut us down. We got kicked out of playoff contention. So they shut me down. They shut Metal World Peace down. And I want to say they shut Brandon Bass down. We were the three vets that they shut down. He was like, it's my last game, man. Y'all got to play this last game. Like, bro, we want to watch just like everybody
else. Yeah, everybody in this arena.
Yeah, we like, want to watch just like everybody else. Yeah. But he said he was going to take 60 shots and did it.
Believe it.
That's clean. That's clean. Okay, I got only a few more, but back in high school, since we in Atlanta, we got to talk about you in high school. You won Mr. Georgia. Mickey D's. Who was the top 3-4 dudes in your class? Not just by the ranking. Who would you really respect in your class?
In my class that was here?
Nah, just in
general.
In general.
Oh, man, it was shit.
Me. You ran Georgia. I'm telling
the country just, too. But it was
country, yeah. My fault. Yeah, I feel you.
Monte Ellis was a guy that I really respected at that time, that he was like, he was on like the Monte same wavelength that I was on. Like, I thought I did something amazing, then I read that he did something exactly the amount of amazing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, Monte Ellis was really putting on in high school. Gerald Green was really putting on in high school. Mm-hmm. Andrew Bynum was putting on. Martell Webster, Amir Johnson. All of us got drafted. CJ Miles.
Yeah, no.
You know, we were the last group of high school guys to get drafted. And I tell you a funny story. We was at USA out in Colorado, and we was watching the draft on the TV, and I'll never forget Sebastian Telfair got drafted. And you know, at that time, everybody that's getting drafted is like men, basically, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 7-footers. Out of high school, nobody ever was like a real traditional high school kid. Like, you know, Bassie's 6 feet, probably 160. He got drafted. He was a lottery pick, 13. And I just remember me and Monte was sitting next to each other, and we was like, yo, we can do it, bro. Like, Bassie, he's opened the door. He's trailblazed this door for us. Like, we can follow in his steps. So all the high school kids, we was in the room, and we was like, so, we all pretty popular. Like, some of y'all bigger than us, though. So, you know, who going to declare for the draft? And Monte was the first one to say, shit, I am. And in that room, I think like 8 or 9 of us, we all decided we was going to declare for the draft.
So how many? So it was 8 or 9 of y'all all?
All of us got drafted.
Man.
Dang, out of
all of us. School. All of us got drafted. I think that, I want to say Martell Webster got drafted the highest. I think Martell went 6. I think Andrew Bynum went 10.
Out of high school,
yeah. And the rest of us was kind of sprinkled around, late first rounders, second rounders, but we all got drafted. All of us had great careers, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of high school, didn't you and Monte have like a crazy battle in high school, like where you guys were?
Yeah, we got cheated.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got cheated. They won a game, but we got cheated. We played them in Mississippi. And just to tell you how big Monte Ellis was in high school, dog. We drove into town, and I never seen a high school kid with a billboard. He was sitting in like this king chair with a crown on, and it said Monte Ellis, best show in Mississippi. Get to the game. We played him at a Coliseum, so like 11,000 seats. We get there. He got a merch booth. They selling replica Monte Ellis jerseys, T-shirts, towels. I'd never seen that for a high school kid before. And I had on headphones, and I'll never forget, we walked into the Coliseum, and I just remember seeing people's faces and their expressions, like booing us, talking shit to us, but I couldn't hear anything. I'm looking, and every single person in that arena was against us. And Jerry West was there. I think Jerry might have been still with the Lakers at that time, and not the Clippers, but I remember seeing Jerry West walk out after the first quarter, and I was kind of offended. Like, damn, like, he left, you know. Yeah. But after the game, he said, I saw all I need to see. They both pros. You know what I'm saying? He said that. But the game, we had the game won. We was up 3. Time running out. And literally, Monte, they got him the ball. We trapped him. He's falling on the ground. And this dude flipped the ball up with one hand and takes it into overtime.
Oh, that is loud
ain't the word. He took the game into overtime. We started getting control of him in overtime, and then the referees took over. I think the referees, they probably called 5 or 6 texts in a row. Like, one, the first blatant thing that happened was they scored, we took the ball out, our point guard dribbling up the floor, beep, travel. So we like, what? So they start blatantly cheating. Mm-hmm. So after that, Everybody tripping. My coach is going crazy. The players going crazy. So they tease.
It was over with.
The referee walked up to us and said, "Hey, man, y'all going back to Georgia tonight. I got to live here." So we wasn't leaving Mississippi with that game. Yeah. That's not to discredit what they did, because Monte was a beast. He was a dog, and the way that they team played was so crazy because they didn't shoot the ball until he got it.
Oh, really?
Like it was like Steph Curry before Steph Curry. Like they'll flip the ball to him, he running around until he got open. He's shooting that ball every single time.
That was
a battle though, but you know, at least we could say that we went head to head and gave the people what they wanted to see. It was a good game.
I was about to say, in high school too, didn't you meet Jay-Z in high school too?
I did.
Yeah, how was that?
Yeah, that whole setup was cool for me as a high school kid, because I met Jay-Z through LeBron. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I met Jay-Z through LeBron. Bron was in his rookie year. They had a game on Tuesday in Atlanta. Jay-Z had a concert Thursday in Atlanta. And Bron told Mav, you know, shout out to Mav, who's doing incredible things on his own right, in his career right now. Bron told Mav to stay in Atlanta and take me to the show. And got there early, and I spent like 2.5-3 hours chilling with Jay-Z. You know, walked out to the stage with him until he went up. His security came and got me when he was about to get off stage. Met him in the back, shook his hand, told me good luck with everything. He jumped in a Sprinter. He was the first person out of the arena. That was the first time I ever seen that. So you know, State Farm, how you can drive, how the buses drive in the back. Jay got off stage. Like, thank y'all, good night. Got off stage, shook my hand, I see you later, jumped in the Sprinter. He was out before anybody else.
Oh my God.
He was out before anybody else. And I went to school the next day. And I'm looking around class like,
yeah. This ain't it.
I ain't doing this for another 4 years.
That just kills my next question. I was going to ask him why pros over college. Like,
college, I never could wrap my head around being broke, hungry, and working out at 6 a.m. I never could wrap my mind around it. I didn't want to party. I didn't want to be on campus. And like I said, I started experiencing pro stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And for me to even have an ounce of an opportunity to go, that was enough for me to be like, I'm good. You know, I looked at it like an internship. Like, if I get drafted somewhere and I won't play for a year or two, that's better than sitting in college and killing it.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather be in the pros already. And shit, it worked out because, you know, I got drafted to a team that my idol was on, that I modeled my game after. I got to see it up close and personal and learn from him. So,
what was the biggest thing you learned from AI?
Man, he was just tough as hell, bro. He was just tough as hell. Like, he never made excuses for his size. And I think that was one of the things that I took with me. You know, he played through injuries. He played big. Like, you know, if you go back and watch Allen Iverson, he played big. He attacked the rim, stayed in the paint, didn't shy away from contact. That's why he was hurt all the time. He didn't shy away from any contact or any of that type of stuff. He just played like he was 6'8", 6'9". And I took that with me throughout my career.
And being so up close and personal to witness that, what do you think, in your opinion, how did AI change the game for the better? Because he did. Like, he changed the game.
Transcended.
Yep.
Yeah, he was transcended on and off the court. You know, I think he's a major reason a lot of these guys feel so comfortable in their skin, you know, and showing more personality and showing how they dress, tattoos, and all of that. I think AI changed that for sports. Mm-hmm. You know, before AI, you know, only person I can really pinpoint that was doing the things that he was doing, you know, with like lifestyle and culture, I would say Primetime.
Yeah.
You know, but on a basketball standpoint, you know, the baggy clothes, the do-rags, the cornrows, you know, you in the minority if you don't have braids now in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, you in the minority if you don't have tattoos in the league now. And I think all of that is because of AI.
And was that someone, because he was your idol, was that someone where, you know, you kind of just came into Philly and it was kind of like, oh, you know, lose the rook, I'm going to take him under my wing? Or was there a period where you had to like earn AI's respect pretty heavy?
Nah, I gotta be honest, man. The very first time I met him, he made a funny ass joke and took me under his wing immediately after the gym. Mm-hmm. The very first time I met him, man, he walked up to me. He says, and I quote, "Oh, you the little motherfucker they drafted to take my job, huh?" And said that and gave me a bear hug. And we've been tight ever since.
That's
man.
So cool.
We've been tight ever since. It take one phone call to me to get him on the phone right now, bro. Like, that's the type of relationship that we have. So
that's love.
And his and he could have took that, you know, as anything and just said, "Forget this kid," you know, but I'm sure the word got around how I felt about him and everything like that. And he did everything he could to make sure I was comfortable and I was welcome.
I think that's a good transition point as we kind of start to wrap up here. But talk about y'all's relationship. I mean, I really have only got to witness y'all on the court and all that, but it seems like, at least from what we've talked about and all that, and just seeing y'all here is, I mean, it seems like y'all are not only super tight, but just that mutual respect for each other is so high. And yeah, talk about y'all's relationship.
Yeah, I got so much love and admiration for Trey. And you know, just the way he carries himself, man, so family oriented. You know what I'm saying? I always see his little brother with him, bro. And always seeing his family around and how much he care about, you know, not only how it's going for him, just making sure all of his people is part of the experience. Mm-hmm. Because trust me, man, this shit is going to come to an end. You know, you feel like it's forever. You're in year six and it feel like it's forever, but it comes to an end. And they stop cheering. You know, they stop cheering. So I think the important part, man, is bringing your people along for that ride, allowing them to have those experiences, allowing them to meet the people that y'all look up to and, you know, jumping on the jets and being able to do these things and being able to, you know, do nice things for your family. You know what I'm saying? And I've always admired that about him being so young and having so much pressure on him to do great things. You know, I'm from Atlanta and I see it in my community. I see the kids with the 11s. All through the schools, and you know, I move around. This is my city, you know. And so for him to tackle that and put all of that on his back and deal with it with the grace that he deal with it, I've always admired him. And then becoming his teammate, getting to know him and picking my places where I can kind of, I feel like I can help him, and at the same time allow him the space to be his own man and just be like, "Yo, this way worked for me. It might not work for you, but I'm gonna give you this little piece." Mm-hmm. And you go ahead, because it's been a couple times he won a trip, and our lockers was across the room from each other. And I used to look at him, I used to be like, "Hey, bro." Like, yeah. He'd be like, "All right." Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And every once in a while, I'd be like, "Hey, man, flip the table." Yeah. Like, just go. Yeah. Just flip the table, bro. You know, because sometimes in order for you to be the man, be the captain, be the person that everybody look to, your voice and your presence got to be heard. But not only that, it got to be respected, and it got to come from a place where, you know, people feel like it's not you versus them, but this is a collaborative effort. You know what I'm saying? I felt like I was trying to help him with that, just trying to find his voice and, you know, not just being the best player on the team, but being the leader of the team, you know, because it's two completely different things. You can be the best player and somebody else can be the leader of the team.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so our relationship grew in that fashion, man, just him being open to listening to me.
And I mean, and we haven't talked since the one incident with the Miami trip and me taking the jet back. It got brought up. And I don't know if you remember, but I remember calling you the next day. We had an off day. You remember?
Yeah.
I called Lou. Just talking about our relationship. Like, this is why I look up to Lou so much. Like, I remember calling him after the jet incident, flying back with my family, and I didn't let my teammates know. So I get back and I'm hearing that, I mean, some of the team is mad or whatever, or they're just wondering where I'm at. But I had told the GM or whatever, and first person I called after I got off the phone with our GM was Lou. And I remember hitting him. I even fucking cried. Like, I felt like I let my team down, because that's just the type of person I am. I don't want to let anybody down, especially my brothers or my team, the people I'm working with every day. And when he was telling me how it could look bad and things like I listened to him and I like understood him, and that type of mistake won't happen again. But that's the type of relationship we have, is I can come to him with whatever I need or what I'm feeling, and know I'm gonna get the best, answer. And I just know he's gonna help me. And that's all he's in it for, is to help others. And he's here to obviously help himself and his family. But he's at the point, he's done his thing. He's the sixth man. He's a legend. He's going to get a gold jacket, a Hall of Fame. And he's going to be in that someday. So he's just at the point where when we were together, he was helping me so much. And that's why I'm always respect Lou, and I appreciate him for everything. And so for me, the last question is, like, what's next? Like, what's next for you? Like,
working on the music. Got the label Winners United. Talented artist signed to me by the name of Akeem Ali. Go check him out.
Oh. He be jamming on the Blu-ray table. We be listening.
He do his thing, and it's moving. It's moving and grooving. And about to sign some other artists. About to sign a major label, JV deal. I keep that tight until it's official. But big news coming soon. Doing that, and other than that, man, I'm just a full time dad, dog. I'm a full time dad. You know what I'm saying? I was supposed to be a volleyball today. But my daughter told me, she said, don't bother, man. We gonna whoop that team. I've been in the studio all day, dealing with meetings and all of that. She knew I had to come see you. And I told her I was doing the podcast with Trey. Her whole face lit up, you know. She loved ice. But she knew I was super busy today. And she was like, you know, today cool. Like, we're handling it today, you know. So
that's good.
Full-time pops, bro.
Man, that's what's up. And I appreciate your daughter letting us have you for a couple hours. And
1,000%. I'm gonna get you on record at some point. I want you to come run a practice with me with the girls.
Oh, that's
easy. That'll be a dope experience. That'll be me being able to see I got friends. I got cool people.
Hey, look, I sent you some twos for them.
Shout out to Ice. Send my girls two pair of sneakers, and they love that. And I'm gonna call you again.
I'm gonna pull up.
But it'll make it all full circle if you can actually pull up and see what I got going on.
Yeah,
check it out.
Gotta pull up on Coach Lou, the six man, underground goat.
Okay, you already know that's a bet. I
appreciate y'all having me.
Man, of course, man. This was such a pleasure.
Good luck with the cast, man. I hope y'all find y'all lane, find a niche, and it work out.
Nah, I appreciate you.
This was awesome, bro. Thank you so much for pulling up.
I love.
Well, that's another episode from The Point by Your Favorite Point. Till next time. Peace.